Formula One has a brand new winner.
15 times Lando Norris has stood on the podium, but never on the top step. Until now, it's a landmark day for Lando. Lando Norris wins for the first time in Formula One. It's victory in Miami for Norris and McLaren. The British driver's dream is realized.
I love you all. I love you all. Thank you so much. Finally.
Miami belongs to McLaren's Lando Norris, scene of his first victory in Formula One. Max Verstappen took P1 in the sprint, but he couldn't complete the clean sweep. What does that mean for the rest of the 2024 season? We're going to discuss it all here on F1 Nation. Welcome to the paddock at the Miami International Autodrome. We're inside the Hard Rock Stadium on the field usually used by the Miami Dolphins NFL team. And this weekend, it was home to Formula One. I'm Tom Clarkson, and with me are Formula1.com editor Greg Stewart and presenter of the F1 Explains podcast, Christian Hugill. Guys, it has been a phenomenal weekend for McLaren, for Lando Norris, and I think for Formula One. Greg, what's your reaction?
Absolutely, as you say, Tom, it's phenomenal. In the office when we were watching it, there were cheers. There's just such a great buzz around the whole paddock. Just no offense to Max Verstappen, but seeing somebody other than Max Verstappen win on merit has just been such a shot in the arm for the sport. Can they keep it going? That's the big question that we're all asking ourselves now, isn't it?
Well, I think we can see how much it means by the fact that when you guys were talking just then, one of the McLaren team came out of the door next to us and squeezed me so hard that it's definitely, I think, potentially injured my right rib. So you can see how much it means to them. These guys are celebrating all around us. So long, so many of these people have been waiting for a high point. You know, if you think of Bahrain only a couple of years ago, where they were practically the slowest car on the grid, and to have come to this way, as you say, Tom, they're winning on merit. That's how much it means to them. My ribs can currently feel how much it means to them.
But Christian, let's just throw it back 12 months to this race. Lando was what, 17th? 90 seconds behind the winner Max Verstappen, and yet he outpaced him today.
I think you're always looking, aren't you, Tom, for proper signs of consistent progress when you're thinking who can take the fight to Red Bull. And almost no one else other than McLaren in that time scale you've mentioned have given us those indicators. You've seen the step forward that sort of happened around Austria last year, where there was the big step forward, and they've continued to creep up and creep up and creep up. And other teams have had false dawn, and at the start of new seasons, Mercedes say, well, we think this might be our year where they get closer. But McLaren have just edged closer and closer and closer. And in the media room that Greg mentioned earlier, we were talking about the McLaren upgrades, and it was like, this could be it, you know, this could be the one. Is this the thing that could free us from the Max dominance? And of course, listen, I like Max. We all like Max. Max has done a phenomenal job. But for the good of wanting a bit of a battle, you want there to be something else. And it felt like this could be it, you know. This upgrade package, it's the real deal.
It does seem to be the real deal. And I felt, as he crossed the line, you could almost hear the cheers of the crowd above the noise of the engine. And a sort of a Mexican wave followed Lando on his slowdown lap. It's a feel-good victory, this one, isn't it?
Well, I think it's feel-good, as you say, and that wave, I think, is going to be resonating a whole way around the world. Lando carries a lot of favour with Formula One fans. He's immensely popular on social media. Okay, he's received abuse that he mentioned in the press conference, people saying, you know, Lando no wins.
Yeah. But he's fueled by that.
Yeah, exactly. He says he likes going on social media and liking the people that throw grief at him, and I love that about him. And I think now, hopefully, he can use this as a platform to build on. He admitted again in the press conference with UTC that yes, this has been a weight on him, and now that weight has been lifted. First win.
Guys, let me throw a few stats at you on Lando. All right, he made his debut with McLaren in Australia back in
2019.
You're good. 5 years, 109 races later, 15 podiums, 8 of which have been second places, and several close calls later, he's now a Grand Prix winner. Let's hear what it means to him.
It felt incredible. I mean, it's a good crowd as well. The whole team are there. A lot of smiling, a lot of cheers. A lot of hard work goes into a day like today, but just happiness, me smiling, which is not always the case, but I dream of these days sometimes, and you never know when they're going to come towards you, but today was that day. So as much as my mind was going crazy, I was thinking of a lot of things. I was also just quiet, you know, it's like a bit lonely out there at times, and it's just nice to kind of reflect on everything you've done to get to that point.
Does this feel like a weight off your shoulders?
As much as I want to say no, it's a yes. Like, to get that first victory is always incredible. And I've, of course, had my moments where we've been close and I've never been able to convert it into the win. But I wasn't worried. Like, as much as a lot of people doubted that I was going to be able to put it together and win a race, I wasn't worried. I've kind of been more confident than ever this year that I've got what it takes and the team have got what it takes. And I was patient with it. I've just been doing my job and executing my races, executing my qualies, and doing what I can do best. And I knew my time was coming. It's not often that I'm optimistic about things, but actually all weekend there's been something, you know, like already practice qualies. We've been close and we were very good on Friday, and there was kind of that spark, and we maybe lost it a little bit into Saturday, but today it definitely came back and turned into a little fire. So yeah, it was an incredible race.
You were sixth at the end of lap one. Did you still have that fire, that belief that you could win at that point?
No. It was put out very quickly, but when I saw Sergio on the inside, I just thought, okay, let's try and make it round turn one for once. So I took it easy. I knew, like, we had good pace, and I knew I was in it for the long game. I was behind Checo the whole of the first stint, but my pace at the end of the first stint was the best on track, and I could still see Max. And when you can see Max, there's hope. And it's not often that you can see Max on track. So I knew the whole time, even when I was back in sixth, that there could be opportunities, whether there was one safety car or something went my way. And I was very quick at the end of the first stint. I kept my head down. We kept pushing. Everyone boxed from ahead of me, and I could just use all the pace that I had, which was a lot of it. And being able to go so long on the tires, being able to have the pace I had, turned into that bit of luck, which I'll happily admit. There was sometimes you got to have a bit of luck on your side and things have got to go your way, and I had that today, but I'll take it happily. And yeah, after the safety car, I could kind of just get my head down and push on, and I was confident I could take it from there.
As you say, the car was genuinely quick today. You had a raft of upgrades on it this weekend. Do you believe that you can challenge for wins on a regular basis now?
I mean, I said at the beginning of the year we could win races. A lot of people doubted what I could say, and I think they doubted that McLaren could win races. They doubted that I could win races, but I was confident. I knew that we had our time coming, so the team have done an amazing job. We weren't even into Q2 here last year, so now the fact we're on top, we won a race, the team have done an insane job to kind of go from where we were to where we are now. It would have been a lot less likely that I won today without these upgrades and without the hard work that they've been putting into everything. So I would like to say it's the start, and now already hungry for more. But yeah, we'll keep our heads down, we'll keep pushing, and I'm sure we can be here a lot more often.
Right, so guys, how did Lando Norris from P5 on the grid win that Grand Prix? In fact, he was P6 at the end of the opening lap. Explain that to me.
Of course, the safety car helped massively. The safety car came out for Logan Sargeant tangling with Kevin Magnussen. Of course, that helped massively, because for those that aren't aware, stopping under a safety car brings you a huge time advantage. The field is going slower, and that enabled Max to, and that enabled Lando, I should say, to climb ahead of Max. But I think what really interested me then is it's not like we've not seen in this Red Bull domination factors like that before. It's not like we've not seen Max fall behind and then quite quickly pick people off. We saw how quickly at this race last year he picked his teammate off, Sergio Perez, after a disappointing qualifying. It was the fact that after that safety car and he got that advantage, he'd not only kept that advantage, he increased it. Now, that's obviously a sign of good pace in McLaren. Is it a sign of some damage picked up by Max Verstappen when he had an unfortunate collision with a bollard? Potentially. I noticed in the post-race interviews, Max was quite keen not to diminish Lando's achievements and saying, listen, we've not been happy with the balance of the car all weekend, which is why I think there's even more genuine excitement in the paddock that this wasn't just a fluke victory. Max said Lando had got pace in that car.
I think, Christian, exactly. when Lando emerged and we had the safety car restart, and I was sort of gritting my teeth and thinking, ah, well, this is the inevitable moment.
He's gonna pick
where
him
Max
off, yeah.
picks him off with ease and pulls out 10, 13 seconds like we saw him do on Lewis Hamilton in the sprint back in China. And it wasn't. Lando just kept eking out the gap. And to the point where on the final lap, lap 57, I was thinking, Lando, you've got 7 seconds in hand. Just go slow. Bring it home. We don't want another Sochi. But all credit to Lando. He did a phenomenal job. And I think any doubters that he did have would have been very silenced by that performance.
I think Red Bull felt they had this coming all weekend. They weren't that happy with the car at any moment. I felt after Max took pole position, he wasn't that elated. He was almost surprised.
He was so surprised. I've almost never seen a more negative pole position, because we heard him on team radio say, wow, really? And then afterwards, to hear someone describe the pole position winning car as terrible was quite something. I can't remember that for a long while. They've never been happy with the setup of the car. They've never been happy with the grip levels, getting it to stick to the track, which has been a consistent theme of previous Miami Grand Prix as well. It's sometimes not easy. Of course, this racetrack isn't used throughout the year with other series. There's not that much rubber laid down. He wasn't happy with the balance, with the grip of the car. And Lando had a couple of messy sessions where he wasn't quite able to properly bring everything out of the car. So I don't think there was any surprise with Max that when Lando was given the opportunity, that happened to be the safety car, he was able to grab it with both hands, because Lando seemed to be far more comfortable in his car all weekend than Max was with his. It shows you how quick the Red Bull is, but, you know, that was a victory on pace. And funny we should say that.
Well, it really is. Christian, because we're joined now by team principal of McLaren, Andrea Stella, who is basking in the glory of his first win as the TP. Just how do you sum up everything that's gone on this afternoon? In fact, all weekend.
Sum up the weekend. Obviously, we came here with a bit of a thrill around the fact that we had another upgrade, but when I say the thrill is also the nervousness, like, is it gonna work? Is it gonna behave like we expect? So many question marks as usual. It's a sprint event. Actually, we started the session in P1 with a problem on Lando's car, so attacking it, which didn't have to do with the upgrades. But then we saw that the signs were very promising. Like, we saw spells already in P1 and also in the sprint qualifying until we put the soft tires, that the car was quick. So there was kind of a growing excitement, I have to say, which we hid very well inside. So that was, in a way, how the weekend was unfolding. And we were really looking forward for some normal qualifying session. The qualifying kind of, like, we thought we would be quicker. But we also knew that we had set up the car for the race. We knew that the soft tires would be difficult for us. And then I have to say, once the race started and we saw Oscar overtaking a Ferrari, then, you know, and Lando said in the briefing, he said, when I saw Oscar overtaking a Ferrari, I said, like, oh, thank you, Oscar, for proving this to me. And actually, Lando got a bit of belief himself, thanks to seeing this. And then when the cars ahead of Lando pitted and Lando had free air, like we saw the lap times he was pulling off, we said, wow, we are quick today. And even without the safety car, we would have let Lando out for a long time. And I think we would have been an interesting final part of the race with the fresh hard tires trying to make up some positions. So that wasn't a short summary, but it was the summary of what we went through this weekend.
You've worked with so many drivers in your career, at Ferrari, of course, and now at McLaren. Knowing Lando as you do, what do you think this win will do for him, for his confidence?
Well, I think even if Lando himself, the team and all the supporters, kind of, we tried to keep the weight on his shoulder as light as possible of the fact that he went so close to the victory so many times, it was always a little bit of a hurdle that he was carrying. So I think by winning the first race, by winning the race on merit, by winning the first race, as soon as the team gave him the material to win, we always said Lando is ready. It's not up to Lando, it's up to the team to give him winning material. He's gonna do it. I think now he will be slightly more relaxed, I would say, and if the car keeps behaving like this, I think we will possibly see even better out of Lando, because I know that while he is incredibly talented and maturing so strongly, I think there's even more to come from him.
Andrea, some of the gossip in the paddock had been that these upgrades were the real deal, but that this was a track that wouldn't necessarily suit McLaren 100%. And you won the Grand Prix, so it doesn't suit you that badly at all, does it? Does that mean we can get excited about future McLaren Red Bull battles in the races to come? Because there's a lot of F1 fans out there who'd really like to see that.
Of course, I like that there's fans believing that, and we do believe as well that we are on a strong trajectory. But at the same time, I think this wasn't necessarily a strong weekend for Red Bull. You know, like if you hear the drivers, they've always lamented that the car wasn't behaving as usual and conditions were quite extreme in terms of the tarmac temperature. Clearly things were relatively unique. You know, like you go out on a soft tire, you should go faster and you hardly go faster than a medium tire. So I think it was some exceptional circumstances. We know that we did improve the car because we see that the data correlate well on track with the development tools. So we are encouraged and optimistic, but I think looking at the numbers, looking at how much we actually improved the car, I would have said that we needed two steps of this size to be competitive regularly with Red Bull, and we have delivered only one yet. So we look forward to the next one, and this would make me much more optimistic that we can take the serious challenge to Red Bull.
It's a good solid step. We're pleased with that step, don't worry. That was an impressive step anyway.
When is the next step?
Well, we are trying to...
A nice moment where Mike Crack, team principal of Aston Martin, drops by to wish you congratulations. This is a feel-good victory, Andrea, I must say.
That's certainly a feel-good victory for me and for everyone at McLaren, our partners, our fans. I'm really impressed by the warmth that we have received by our competitors. You know, like if they feel good or not, I'm not sure, but definitely they have shown a lot of fair play, a lot of sportsmanship. These are values, they are important. And I appreciate that we show this not only in words, but also with this kind of gestures. So fair play and hats off to our competitors. But obviously once we are on track, we try to fight hard and compete with each other, but always within the regulations and always with respect.
Andrea, I apologize that on this day of days, I want to talk about Sochi 2021. I'm sure everyone in McLaren remembers that literal dark day. Lando's come so close to the victory. Could you just talk about the arc of Lando's career since then? Because he said at the start of the year, I'm ready to win races now more than ever. Have you seen that change in him? And was this just a matter of time until this victory came?
I think what Lando said about himself, I'm ready to win races more than ever. That's what I see. I saw the work that went during the winter, and that started already last year, you know, reviewing some of the sessions. Like there was a qualifying session in Mexico where we didn't pass Q1 and we were pushing when we didn't need to push the car in Q1. The car would have been quick enough. Like, why were we pushing 100%? Like, all these little elements where you have a lot to learn, they really went through very thoroughly by Lando, by the team, took all the opportunities to see how we can improve. But I saw the work being done in at high level in a very committed way, and Lando wanted to make sure if the car is good, I need to be ready. And you know, over the winter we kept telling Lando, like, well, the car looks promising, mate, you know. I think this gave him the motivation. Oh, I don't want to be on the back foot if the car is ready. Even because he knows that Oscar is getting ready very, very rapidly as well. And we knew Lando was winning material. It was up to us to give him the car to be able to do so. And at the first opportunity, he delivered. We go back to Russia, important learning as well, you know, along the same lines. You review, you understand how you have to improve. That one was very important for the team as well. I think the team picked out of the Russia more than what actually Lando picked out of that race, because the call should have come from the team to pit in Russia. So it was our responsibility in that case. We learned our lesson and we move forward.
Well, as Niki Lauda used to say, you learn more from the losses, don't you?
Yeah, it's painful, it's tough, but it's true.
Let's celebrate the wins. You go and enjoy yourself. You're not flying home tonight, are you? You're going to stay with Lando, with Zach. Glass of red?
We're going to stay with the team this evening, celebrate and enjoy this moment. And the final thing I want to say is that this victory is for Gilles de Ferran. He's here, his helmet has a pin on my shirt, he's been with us, with the team, he was on the podium today, he was on the pit wall, like really strong presence. Gilles, this is for you.
Lovely words, Andrea, thank you very much, very well done to you and everybody at McLaren.
Thank you very much.
Calling all entrepreneurs. Do you know what this is? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. And if you want to hear a lot more of that in the future, then don't get left behind, because Shopify is revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide thanks to its simplistic approach to online and in-person selling. It's got all of your sales channels covered, from a shopfront-ready POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform. And it even helps you start selling across social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And what's great about Shopify is that it knows that every business is different. It doesn't matter if you're selling floral arrangements or fine art prints. Its industry-leading tools are designed to give you complete control over your brand without needing to learn any skills in design or coding, and most importantly, the confidence to take your business to the next level. It's incredibly empowering for entrepreneurs, no matter where you are on your journey, because Shopify is on hand to support your success every step of the way. With its award-winning help and an extensive business course library to guide you at every turn, it's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/nation, all lowercase. Go to shopify.co.uk/nation to take your business to the next level today. shopify.co.uk/nation. So, Andrea said to us on the show in Japan, we're going to win race, we're going to win race, and they've gone and done it. I feel this is a team that is delivering on its promises now.
It's just what we were saying as he came in, that growth has been consistent. There's not been the great big highs and lows and flashes of pace one weekend and not so much the other. That has grown consistently throughout, and you did get the feeling that if anyone was going to challenge Red Bull this year, yes, we've seen Ferrari step up, but that growth from McLaren has been fantastic. And can I just say, I particularly enjoy as well how cool we are as Formula One reporters and journalists, that as soon as he's had this fantastic victory, we're going, yeah, but when's the next step? And what about the time you lost? Which is just...
But do you know what, Christian? I think that's what he's thinking as well.
Oh, of course it
that
is.
That is the way,
it's the nature of the beast, isn't
yeah,
it?
Of course it is.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, Andrea is a man of science. He's a PhD. He's a dottore, as they'd say in Italy. This is one data set. Miami, yes, there's been growth from the team and they've thrown on this upgrade, which is a big upgrade. He talked me through it on Friday and it's sizable. He wouldn't let us call it Spec B, but it's sizable. But now he'll want to see how that performs in Imola. Now he'll want to see how that performs at the races we've got coming up. And that's what's going to be fascinating.
We were just talking, TC, you mentioned Miami last year. We mentioned Bahrain a couple of years ago. But let's go even further back than that. You know, there was a time when in the Honda era of McLaren, they looked like the slowest car on the grid. The car was lacking sponsors. It had a black paint job. It seemed really, really bleak. The more I reflect on this win, this sort of feels like the first proper McLaren back victory. Yes, Daniel Ricciardo's win was one of those sort of outlier weekend where McLaren were in the right place at the right time with the car pace. But to have won this one on merit, to see this team with its new, it's not too new anymore, but papaya branding car full of sponsors, two fantastic drivers in Lando and Oscar that were tied down and secured early on while the rest of the driver market was going mad. This is a team moving such in the right direction, and this cements that as well. I think this is a really significant win, and we, you know, I grew up in Formula One in the 90s. I watched Mika Hakkinen versus Michael Schumacher. It was always alien to me that McLaren weren't up there. This is where McLaren should be for fans of my generation. So I think this is a really significant moment for the team.
We are joined now by the architect of the McLaren that has just won this Grand Prix, Zak Brown, CEO of McLaren. How sweet is this moment?
Pretty awesome. What a great race. I mean, Oscar drove brilliantly. Feel bad he didn't get the result he deserves. Lando certainly got the result he deserves for the team. The upgrades clearly worked. It was just great to see Max pull away. Look, I don't even know how to say Lando pulled away from Max, but he did. And strategy was perfect, perfect execution, and we earned that one.
Let's talk about Lando now. How much did he deserve this win?
I think it was long overdue for him to win, but it's been long overdue for kind of anybody to get a chance to win. It's great because I think once you get that first one off your back, then the second one doesn't seem too far away. So feet on the ground. It's good that we have been quicker than Ferrari the last two races now, because that's who we're trying to catch in the championship. And just an awesome weekend.
I mean, Zach, let's talk about what you think this win will do for Lando. He came close in Russia 21. He's now done it. Do you think the sluice gates are going to open?
Yeah, I think there's something about once the driver's won once, just the second and the third one come easier. You don't have to try too hard. So who knows when that'll come, but getting the first one out of the way was important.
And does this feel different to Monza in 2021? Okay, you won there, you got a 1-2, but the pace this weekend is what stood out.
Yeah, I mean, our pace in Monza, you know, even though Max and Lewis tangled, they were behind us when they tangled. So I think we had the pace that weekend too. But given the level of dominance that Max has had to just beat him outright like that, you know, it's hard to have anything more special than your first win. But that was with Daniel. To have kind of, especially my background, my history with Lando, makes it feel special. And being in Florida, Jules DeFerrin was a very important part of our racing team. He was lived in Florida. So I would say it's a tie as to which one was more exciting. Definitely the two most exciting races of my life.
You've been putting the jigsaw puzzle that is McLaren together since 2016 when you joined the team. Is this confirmation that you've got everything you need now?
Yeah, I think so. You know, what we have is a lot of work, hard work ahead of us. So, you know, by no means are we done, or is this going to be any easier? But I think it does show that we've got the team to develop and produce a race-winning car. We've got the drivers. We have the support from sponsors, the fans. So I do think we have everything, but it's a tough sport.
What is the plan for the rest of the night?
I'm going to just roll with the punches. I'm getting too old for this stuff. So I think I'm going to return about 1,000 emails that I have of congratulations and catch up and let the boys be the boys.
Many congratulations from all of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Always great to speak to Zach. And I don't know, there's such a positive vibe. I wouldn't want to bet against McLaren now. I think this upgrade is that good. When both drivers have got it in Imola next week, what do you think?
Well, that was the thing to see. When the race started and Lando fell behind Sergio Perez, I was frustrated because Oscar was up there in P2 with the 50% upgraded car. He had less of the upgrades, and Lando was sort of hemmed in behind Sergio. And I was like, I want to see what that upgrade can do. And Imola will give us a really nice chance to see it. You know, it's a track that is used by the teams for testing, maybe not the ideal testing track like Barcelona, but it's going to be fascinating to watch there.
It will. Well, look, why don't we have a look at what's gone on behind Lando Norris here in Miami? And for the first time this season, it was a P2 for Max Verstappen. And here's what he had to say after the race when he wasn't able to catch Lando Norris.
I'm very happy to be beaten by Lando today. He definitely deserved it. He was just miles faster at the end. So yeah, it's great. You know, winning your first race is always, I think, quite emotional, and it brings you back to, you know, all the days that you work towards Formula One, and then, you know, you dream of course being on the podium, but then, you know, being on the top step. So yeah, of course, naturally I'm not very happy with my day, but you can appreciate and respect what Lando has done today, and I'm very happy for him.
Were you surprised by his pace today?
Well, I mean, I didn't really see him in the beginning because I was more focused on Oscar behind and the Ferraris. But then I boxed and I heard the pace that he was doing on the used mediums. I was like, that's quite insane. I mean, I would have never been able to do so. So I knew, even if there wouldn't have been a safety car, that when he would come out on fresh tires, that I would have had to push on quite a lot to be able to keep him behind. Then actually, I mean, the safety car came. Yeah, it's racing, you know. Sometimes it works for you, sometimes it works against you. And even with that safety car, we still had all the opportunities to win today, but we're clearly not quick enough after that safety car. And once I realized that, I just settled in and tried to come home in second.
Tell us about the performance of your car. How did it compare today to the sprint yesterday?
Yeah, I was just quite poor, I would say, in the race. But also, I mean, I never really felt comfortable the whole weekend with it. I think on the medium it was still okay-ish, but on the hard it was quite a disaster. I mean, just low grip, just very tricky balance in the low speed. I couldn't really lean on the rear, while in the high speed I was understeering a lot. So when you have these two issues, you cannot also balance it out because you're chasing two different things. So just driving to the grip that I had, and it was not a lot.
Max, just two moments I wanted to ask you about. First of all, were you aware just how close Checo got to you at turn one?
Yeah, I was very aware. I mean, I turned in and I saw him lock up. I looked after the race. There was like a scratch on my diffuser, so something must have hit. But yeah, it was very close. Could have ended in a disaster, of course, for the team as well. So yeah, lucky.
And just the second one was the cone at turn 15. What happened there?
I didn't like it, so I decided to take it out and test the durability of the front wing as well. So that's a crash test done. Yeah, there was no damage. The cone was out of the way for everyone. So everyone, it was basically free for all after that.
So Max wins the sprint from pole, all right, on Saturday. He then takes pole for the Grand Prix. And yet, put some words into my mouth, guys. I feel he was unsure about the Grand Prix right from the get-go. And he almost got taken out by his teammate, by the way, at turn one.
Which would have been, I mean, spectacular, wouldn't it? Could you imagine the scenes? But I think this might be slightly my fault, because I interviewed Max on Thursday. Yeah. And said to him, one of the things that's fascinated me about the Max Verstappen domination is every time there's potential for a problem, there never is. The rain comes down, Max stays ahead. Safety car restarts, Max stays ahead. Bit of chaos or drama or red flags or safety cars, Max stays ahead. Well, this didn't happen this weekend. And you think back to the moment where he hit the bollard, and you could class that, I said to Max, you just don't seem to make mistakes. Well, he could class that as a mistake, but ultimately, this is probably the result of a man who's been complaining about his balance and clinging onto that car all weekend, that it finally gets away from him. And yes, his team have said that there was a bit of damage underneath the car on the underside after hitting the bollard. He might have escaped front wing damage, but there was aero damage underneath the car. But I think that shows, TC, that there were, you know, this victory isn't by accident. This victory is because McLaren were quickest on the day. So Red Bull were just never fully comfortable.
If anything, that's something that slightly takes the excitement and the shine off this McLaren victory for me. Not much does, but it's just the fact that Max has never looked on it this weekend. Like, and I know that's resulted in poles, it's resulted in wins, but that is the level he's operating at, whereby he can have off days, the car cannot be quite there, and he's still able to take poles and victories. This was not Red Bull's weekend. McLaren capitalized and they did a fantastic job. But what I really want to see is Max turn up at a race where the car is good, the car is sorted, and he can still be beaten by Oscar, or he can still be beaten by Lando.
But I guess we're getting there, because this is two weekends already this season in the relatively early stages, with Australia and Miami, where Red Bull haven't looked fully comfortable, whereas last year they looked comfortable all the time with the exception of one Grand Prix. And even though, of course, Max retired from the race in Australia, there was still a thinking around that Carlos Sainz had the pace to win that race. So you know what Andrea said about the one step forward. There was some worries at pre-season testing. I was in Bahrain and it was like, oh, here we go again. In fact, it could be even worse. Well, actually, two Grand Prix already where Red Bull aren't too comfortable. So for that, I'm very keen not to diminish Max and Red Bull achievements, and there will be Red Bull fans that are loving the dominance. But for those who aren't loving the dominance, maybe that's a little bit of encouragement, shall we say.
You talked about the cone. The turn
the
15.
The dreaded cone.
When was the last time we saw Max Verstappen make a mistake like that?
I'm racking my brain to see. They don't happen
very
often.
I think we're talking certainly many races, but years. And it's all I'm doing is proving the point that you guys have both made, that he was out of sorts this weekend. I agree with you, Christian. I think Australia was a case in point as well. It is concertinaing. It is getting closer. We've been saying for months that Formula One is really good, really close behind Max Verstappen. Now I think he's come back to the pack, or the pack have caught him up. And I think looking ahead for the rest of this season, it's game on.
To answer your question, the first question, TC, I can't remember a specific example, but I bet you'll have to go back to 2021 to find a major Max mistake. Now, both Max and Lewis in that year drove like world champions. They also both made mistakes. Now, the reason they both made mistakes is because they were pushing each other so hard. We saw a Max mistake today because the car was tricky. What we now need to see, and maybe when McLaren can make that second step forward, is people putting so much pressure on Max that mistakes start to happen. Look at, I mean, go back to, I don't know, 2011 Canadian Grand Prix. Sebastian Vettel made that mistake in running wide in damp conditions because Jenson Button was hounding him. So we're seeing mistakes happen because of the car not being tricky. The next step is let's see what teams, potentially McLaren, can be right on him, so those mistakes happen more frequently, because mistakes do happen more frequently in the heat of battle rather than when you're winning races by 15 seconds.
When you're under pressure.
When you're under pressure.
And coincidentally, guys, the off-form Red Bull has happened on the same weekend that Adrian Newey has announced that he's leaving the team in 12 months' time. Obviously, it's a coincidence, and I'm sure Red Bull will bounce back. But in terms of seismic moments in Formula One, this is right up there. I mean, Newey leaving Red Bull after 19 years is a huge momentum swing longer term for that team. I can't see it any other way.
No, and I suppose, like we were talking about people that are enjoying Red Bull domination less, this is a seismic moment, because this is the moment where Verstappen and Newey, this partnership that has just taken Formula One by the horns since 2022, particularly in terms of like domination, go their separate ways, almost necessarily. We don't know if Max is considering other options for the future. We don't know if Adrian Newey is necessarily going to come back to Formula One. There's a lot of rumours. But this is the moment. And this is the moment as well where, for Red Bull, if McLaren really do come on strong and they're starting to show performance consistently that is taking the fight to Red Bull, Red Bull won't have that expertise to rely on. They won't have an Adrian Newey to be like, ah, we'll throw this upgrade on, we'll make this in the 2026 car. They're not going to have that. So, yeah, fascinating moment.
What is coincidence, TC? You're absolutely right. Is this happening on the weekend that Adrian announces his departure? What I don't believe is coincidence is that Max doesn't at any point go, the Mercedes rumours are completely untrue, I am staying at Red Bull for the rest of my career, which he sort of said in the past that that might well be the case, but doesn't at the moment. As we were just saying, as Greg just said, the pack, we are starting to see solid signs of it sort of closing up a little bit. So Red Bull lose their advantage in terms of the pack closing up a little bit. We're going into a new rule cycle in 2026 where this formula is going to get considerably more dependent on engines. All the engines at the moment are quite close together, and you're looking at Mercedes, which, as we know, is by its very nature an engine supplier. So yes, it's coincidence, but are we looking at the, you know, now going down the hill on the Red Bull domination? And if we are, without Adrian Newey in the mix, does it give Max Verstappen more to think about long term? Potentially. I think he could be stronger in coming out and going, I'm not going, I'm staying, doesn't matter what Adrian does, doesn't matter about the disturbances, I'm staying. But he hasn't put the rumours quite to bed, so it's interesting. It's a bit of a stay tuned, folks, moment, isn't it?
I think it is. I think Red Bull are still going to be really strong, and look at Max Verstappen. He's, you know, look at the Drivers' Championship now. He's on 136 points. Perez is his closest challenger. You know, this championship, stay tuned, folks, but it's still his to lose, right? And so I think there's still a lot of positives around Red Bull. They're a brilliant racing team. Pit stops are on point. You know, to say this is the start of the downward turn, I don't know, but it is just an interesting moment that Newey's off.
Oh, it could not be. It could be a minor little dip in the hill that continues to rise upwards.
And let's look at the races in the past where Max has had an off moment. Singapore last year, he came back in Suzuka, utterly
could
dominated.
Could win in Imola by an hour,
exactly.
So absolutely.
You know, and Australia this year, he had, you know, that unfortunate retirement, bounces back at the next race, boom. So actually, Christian, let's have this chat again after Imola. If McLaren maintain the threat, then
that's why I was saying key to ask Andrea what it did, because we want to see that continuing. And I'd still be astonished if Max didn't win the world championship. I just wonder if this year, I just wonder if long term we might look back and think, you know, the Red Bull because not only were Red Bull dominating, but it sort of looked like the gap was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. Well, are we now starting to finally see the moments where it's not getting bigger anymore and it's falling? So I don't think Red Bull have anything to worry about short term, maybe not medium term, but long term, I think there it's a different story. Yeah. And the history shows us in Formula One, dominance never lasts. And being on the right side of those clever driver moves where you spot the end of a particular era and start another one happening is why Lewis Hamilton is a seven-time world champion and why Fernando Alonso is a two-time world champion. So Max will be keeping his cards close to his chest and keeping himself open-minded, I think, about the future.
Let's go on to Ferrari now. Of course, that's the home of Lewis Hamilton in 2025. They are currently second in the Constructors' Championship, second to Red Bull. Got quite a comfortable lead over McLaren still, who are P3. Do you think they're going to be feeling... Are you ready for the gag? Are they going to be feeling a little blue? Get it?
I enjoyed that, TC. Excellent.
Given where they started, and in fact, of course, they've come home third and fourth. Do you think they're going to be a little bit disappointed?
Yeah, I really wanted to see both drivers just kick on in this race, and it didn't really materialise at any point, the threat. You know, Oscar was quickly past Charles. Charles wasn't then able to fight back. And it was just a slightly underwhelming performance. And I think you could see it in Fred Vasseur's interviews after the race. It was a slight feeling of, well, I can't be particularly happy that a McLaren team that we thought we had fairly well in check have basically superseded us, at least at this race. And so that dynamic that, oh, it's between Red Bull and Ferrari this year has now been upset. And Ferrari, for all their lovely paint jobs, they weren't quite at the races today with the top guys.
This is what Charles Leclerc said about all this in the press conference after the race.
If we compare ourselves to Max this weekend, it's been a positive weekend. However, we cannot completely ignore Lando. And Lando in SQ2, I remember he did a lap where I was like, okay, they are extremely quick. Then for some reason, and as Lando said, I think they weren't as special on Saturday for some reason. But today they were really, really strong. So I'm just really happy for Lando. You know, as much as we all want to beat each other and to come out on top, it's always... emotional to see so many emotions on one of your competitors. We have all grown up together. I mean, Max and myself were on the category above, but you always keep an eye on the younger categories. And I remember looking at Lando when he was in KF3, and we all had this same dream of being a Formula One driver one day. And then once you achieve that, you want obviously the first win. And I remember my first win, and it is a very, very special moment. So I told him already he needs to enjoy as much as possible, but I don't have to tell him that. As I've said many times, I think the season will be up to upgrades. We have ours coming very soon, and that will define a little bit the rest of the season for us. So we've got to work hard, and hopefully those upgrades will be as good as theirs and will help us to do a significant step forward.
Can you just give us a date? When are those upgrades coming? Is it for Imola?
It's soon.
I think it's really interesting Charles says that, because last year we never really knew who was the second quickest team, and it felt to me that Lewis Hamilton having such a good year was what helped Mercedes get second in the constructors' title. This year it really felt like, okay, we've got Ferrari as the second quickest team, and that's, we know who's second quickest this year. So this weekend the question now is, well, actually, are McLaren the second quickest team? Actually, can McLaren's upgrades mean that they can become the first quickest team and catch Red Bull? And if there's more Ferrari upgrades coming, well, where are they going to fit? Are they going to be able to pick up another race win, or are they just going to be looking to get ahead of McLaren? It feels a bit closer between the three, and it's nice to know who isn't the second quickest team. I think this battle between what seems to be Ferrari and McLaren will be a really interesting storyline for the rest of this season. And as for my opinion as to which one will ultimately be second quickest, I've got absolutely no idea. It feels like such a long season. It's so upgrade dependent, isn't it?
I think the intra-team battle at Ferrari is going to be really interesting, because at the start of the season, Carlos Sainz seemed to have the advantage over Charles Leclerc. Yet this weekend, it was back advantage Leclerc. And actually, I thought he was really impressive this weekend, because remember, he did one lap in FP1. And then went straight into sprint qualifying and lined up second on the grid. He was just on it from the moment he got to this racetrack, spin in FP1 aside. And that showed a level of confidence that we haven't seen from him in recent races.
It did. It's the slightly John Alesi-like agony of, oh, Charles in FP1 where he spun in the first few laps. And, you know, so limited on practice. But same way as John Alesi, big John Alesi fan here, he was magic after that, and what he did after that I thought was incredibly impressive. And Charles is capable of those really high performances that are just staggering to watch sometimes. Really great.
Looking further back, it was a more positive weekend for Mercedes. Both cars into Q3 and a double points finish. First time in a while we've seen Hamilton ahead of Russell. And Hamilton really getting his elbows out in both races, the sprint in particular with Kevin Magnussen. But so while he was enjoying his racing, what do we make of Mercedes this weekend?
Again, I don't think the team would deny that it was a slightly off-colour performance. I think George Russell used the phrase rubbish, just a bit of a rubbish race, really, he said of his Sunday. And yet, as you say, Lewis Hamilton, what Lewis Hamilton loves doing is dominating a race from the front and showing everybody that he is the GOAT, he's the best in the world. But he also loves telling those stories about when he was in karting and he had the cheapest tyres or used tyres and going up against rivals and beating them. He loved that, and he was loving his racing this weekend, loving battling with Nico Hülkenberg in that race. On the run down to turn 11 with Nico, he was like, we're either going to have an aircraft style crash or I'm going to get by, and I'm going to get by. Again, battling with Kevin, he really enjoyed that, really enjoyed Kevin's integrity as well, admitting that he'd been playing a tactical game. So yeah, I think while Lewis wants to be winning championships and wants to be winning races, I think he was loving the situation he's in.
They're often quite nice to each other, this lot in this paddock, aren't they? And actually, I quite enjoyed them going at it hammer and tongue, exactly as Greg said, the honesty between the two drivers afterwards. We're in an era where sometimes it's best to let somebody overtake you so not to ruin your tyres. So it was fantastic to see them battling. I really enjoyed that, enjoyed seeing Lewis do that. I can't imagine for a minute, even though, as you rightly said, TC, there's a positive in both cars into Q3 and all of that, they're going to be looking at McLaren making this step forwards and picking up. You've got to pick up on scraps when you're in an era of Red Bull domination like this, and the scrap was that that Red Bull was tricky on its balance, and McLaren have swooped in and picked up that scrap. They want that to be them. They're not even behind the people who are picking up the scraps. So I still think they're just going to go away being like, well, yeah, two cars into Q3 and a bit more solidly in the points, but we're not on the podium, we're not winning. I just still sense a real air of disappointment around that team this season. Every year we come into pre-season testing and think they're going to roar back, aren't they, and it just doesn't seem to happen.
And the unpredictability of that car, yeah. Still the sort of yo-yo of performance, it's frustrating to watch. I can't imagine how frustrating it is to work on it.
George and Lewis have both said in the past, even inconsistency lap to lap, you know, how it handles into one particular turn and one particular track can differ from one lap to the next. So and they just seem unable to get to grips with that consistently. It's been the case for a couple of years. So I still think they'll be disappointed. And I think it's good for the sport to see Mercedes up there. So I hope for the sport's sake and for their sake, they're able to be snapping at the heels of Ferrari and McLaren soon.
Who else stood out for you this weekend? We've discussed the top teams. I mean, who wants to pick up the baton and talk about V-Carb, all right? Yuki Tsunoda comes home seventh in the Grand Prix. Daniel Ricciardo does that fourth place in the sprint. It's a team that is punching. It's punching, isn't it? Punching above its weight.
It is, at times. It's been such a strange weekend for all the drivers, I think. But Daniel's performance in sprint qualifying and then the sprint holding on to that P4 was stunning. Then he qualifies P18. Starts the race P20 because he's carrying penalty through. But then Yuki Tsunoda saves the day with a really, really impressive drive to take the P7, matching his best performance of the year. He's given 12 points. Well, Ricciardo and Tsunoda together have given 12 points to the team, to Haas's two, who are their closest people that they're fighting with. They've come with upgrades this weekend. Lauren Mekies was very sure that that would put them in the fight. And look, it has. You had Yuki battling around the Mercedes. So I think really positive performance, and continue to be impressed by Yuki Tsunoda's performance this year.
I agree with everything Greg said. A good weekend, but I they seem to struggle to be consistently good. Daniel Ricciardo with a brilliant sprint and then not so good in the race. So yeah, I completely agree with Greg. I do want a word for Esteban Ocon, who I felt last year at Alpine, it was sort of impossible to split the Alpine drivers. And I expected last season one of those to stake their claim and go, I'm the number one driver at this team. And we didn't really feel like it. Well, this weekend, it's Esteban scoring Alpine's first point. And I felt this year that he's the one who slightly edged Pierre. And I think that's a really difficult thing to do. Remember what momentum was behind Pierre when he was doing so well at
at what used to be AlphaTauri when he was driving that team forward and felt like the solid team leader. Well, he seems to be, this season at least, been put in his place by Esteban Ocon a little bit. So, of course, we could say similar with what we said at Mercedes. There's no way they're going to be happy scoring a singular point. This is a team with much bigger ambitions, but that's a little positive for them this weekend and definitely a step forward for Esteban this season, I think.
CH, I had to look away on lap one. You know, when they were going wheel to wheel through sort of 15, 13, 14, 15, side by side, I was thinking, Melbourne 2023, please don't. To be fair to them, they didn't. No, they gave each other just enough racing room.
Which I think, considering actually when those two were signed for the team, broadly speaking, they have actually behaved. Because that one in Australia was, I thought, even a slightly unfortunate incident where it was just after a red flag restart, wasn't it? If I remember that right. So it was all a bit chaotic. So, yeah, but I am impressed with Esteban. It's not like Pierre's far behind looking at the race times, but that's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, isn't it, for Alpine?
And actually, they've really turned around that performance. You know, the car at the opening race was overweight. It had too much drag. It was the dog of the paddock. Whereas now, they brought it here. Both cars are now on the weight limit of 798 kilos. And it is starting to perform. I'm not saying they're going to be the McLaren of last year, but I feel they are.
It's a step forward, isn't it? Without
question. It's definitely a step forward.
Again, from where we were in Bahrain, definitely. And I should say, to agree with Greg, a word on Yuki Tsunoda, because I mentioned that we often saw him outperformed by Pierre Gasly. Even though Daniel Ricciardo has shown signs this weekend of improving his performance, that's not to detract away from Yuki's, who, you know, P7, what handy points that is for VCarb, what handy points that is for the team. So a more impressive driving in an impressive season for Yuki.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp. We've all got things that weigh us down from time to time. Sometimes it's the pressure of feeling overwhelmed at work, family tensions, or a general sense of anxiety about the future. And I want you to know that you're not alone. And the best thing you can do when you're feeling like you're carrying a lot of stress around and don't know how to unload it is to ask for help. And therapy can be a game changer in that respect. You might not realize it, but therapy is not just for those who've experienced major trauma or crisis. It's about finding the tools to help you manage stress, set boundaries, and discover healthier ways to cope with life's challenges. And it's for everyone who wants to grow and improve. Therapy can help you find a safe space to let it all out, regardless of whether you're carrying big or small worries around with you. And trust me, there's nothing quite like being able to speak freely without fear of judgment. So if you've been feeling weighed down by stress, don't hesitate to seek out a therapist and get it all off your chest. It could be the best step you take towards a happier, healthy you. With almost 5,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/F1Nation. That's betterhelp.com/F1Nation. Look, so many stories have come out of this Grand Prix weekend in Miami, but it was also round two of F1 Academy. And Abby Pulling dominated this round. She converted two pole positions into two race victories, extending her lead at the top of the standings to 34 points. And I caught up with her after race two.
I'm absolutely over the moon. It couldn't be more perfect. I'm glad that I snatched the fastest lap in this race as well, because the extra point, you know, it goes a long way, and it's incredible.
Now look, there was a test before this race. What were your expectations coming in? Did you think you'd dominate to the way that you have?
I definitely didn't think I'd dominate. No, not at all. The test did go very well, so we knew we had the pace there, but Zandvoort is a completely different track and it was different conditions to where we are now. So yeah, it wasn't expected, but I think you don't want to set your expectations high. You need to kind of keep grounded, you know, be realistic. And it ended up being kind of unrealistic now I think about it, what's happened this weekend.
And Abby, you are now the hunted, right? The crosshairs are on you. You're the one that everyone is now chasing. Just how confident are you going forward? I think Barcelona's the next race, isn't it?
Yeah, we actually struggled a little bit in Barcelona pre-season testing, but we've developed the car a bit since then. And, you know, our tyre deck didn't seem too bad in that one. We managed to tyre pretty well, so hopefully it translates there. But me and the team will just keep working, doing what we're doing. It seems to be working, and Yeah, I just can't stop thinking about my family. I wish they were here right now to be here, and I can give them a cuddle. If my dad's listening, love you, Dad.
Look, what about Barcelona being a proper racetrack rather than a street track? Because you've done Jeddah, you've been here in Miami where the walls are very close. Does it require a slightly different approach when you go to Barcelona?
I mean, I absolutely love the street circuit, so I'm glad we've got a few of them on the calendar this year. But yeah, Barcelona is very different. It's a different tarmac. It's much cleaner. There's less dust. So that would definitely play a part. And also Barcelona is notorious for the degradation. It's a very abrasive circuit. So it'll be a lot, but I think it's nothing that me and the team can't handle. We've just got to keep our chin up, head high, and just keep, you know, doing what we're doing.
One of my observations here in Miami is just the following that F1 Academy is getting now. And of course, we had the news about Netflix break this weekend. Everywhere I look, there are boom mics following you guys around. It's big time now.
It's very intense, to say the least. You get out the car and straight away there's a boom, like you're hitting your head on a boom. It's great that they're, you know, putting us on that platform, putting us on Netflix, and having people follow us around, showing the behind the scenes of what it is like to be a racing driver. You know, it's not just getting in and out the car. There's so much more that goes on, arguably 10 times more off track work than it is on track. So it's great that it's bringing a light to it. And just women's sport in general, not just females in motorsport, women's sport and as a whole. And it's a great time to be a woman in motorsport, I think.
Certainly is. Look, very well done this weekend. Best of luck going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So Dorian Pan dominated the opening round back in Jeddah, and Abby Pulling has done that here. Were you surprised by her pace, Christian?
Really surprised. I'd spoke to Chloe Grant, who was in the F1 Academy last season at the start of this, and she was saying, Dorian Pan's going to win this season. She's going to wipe the floor with everyone. She's a different class. And everybody you spoke to around the F1 Academy paddock in Saudi said, this is Dorian Pan's championship. And then I was stood in at this very point in the stadium earlier in the weekend, watching that big screen that's just been turned off behind us over there, and saw Abby qualify in front of Dorian by half a second.
That's nuts, isn't it? That's a huge gap.
Yeah. Oh dear, somebody's dropped a beer by the side of us. The celebrations at McLaren continue. Oh, it's a water. That's okay. Then that's not as bad. Thank goodness for that. You think half a second. Wow, that's a statement qualifying from Abby. That's not just shading it. And that continued throughout the rest of the weekend. That's a major storyline in F1 Academy this weekend. The rise of Abby Pulling, because many predicted that Dorian would just dominate this championship. Looks like we're going to have a real title battle on our hands.
Yeah, and the rise of F1 Academy, as I touched on with Abby in that interview, Netflix, they've got their own. I mean, that's fantastic. They're filming it now. It's going to be out, I think, at the start of next year. It's huge.
Reese Witherspoon's production company, Hello Sunshine, taking that on, and it's massive. There's so much positivity around that series at the moment, and they've given us a fantastic weekend of racing. They gave it to us in Jeddah as well. But like Christian said, I expected to then see Dorian Pan come here and wipe the floor with everybody again. And I thought we were going to be in a situation like we had back in the W Series times with Jamie Chadwick, where she was just the step ahead of everybody. And Abby Pulling did an amazing job this weekend. So great.
And do you know what's lovely as well is how quickly the series has been sort of accepted into the F1 world. You mentioned the F1 Explains podcast at the start of this episode, TC. We were out in Austin last year, and the American fans there, you know, it's like they were talking about it like you talk about F2. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to watch the F1 Academy. We're really excited. This weekend, that's continued. You've seen the engagement of the US audience in the series. Like it's just always been there, like the Porsche Super Cup, like F2, like F3. It's just, oh, this is part of what we do now. It's fantastic to see. And the racing this weekend has been fantastic. Proper battles, some proper ding-dongs. It's been brilliant to see. It's a joyous addition to the sort of F1 circus. It's brilliant.
And the next round of F1 Academy will be in Barcelona at the Spanish Grand Prix over the weekend of the 21st to the 23rd of June. So look out for that. And for more reaction and analysis, go to f1academy.com or follow at F1 Academy on social media. So the top 10 looks like this. Lando Norris wins his first race in Formula 1 to become the 21st British winner in the sport's history. Max Verstappen is second and Charles Leclerc third. Now, after Sainz's 5-second post-race penalty for causing a collision, he drops to fifth behind Sergio Perez. Then Hamilton is sixth and Tsunoda is seventh, ending a strong weekend for VCarb. Russell is 8th, Alonso is 9th, and Ocon scores his and Alpine's first point of the season in 10th. In the Drivers' Championship, Max Verstappen on 136 points is now 33 clear of his teammate Checo Perez at the top of the table. Charles Leclerc is third on 98, with Norris and Sainz now tied on 83. Piastri is sixth on 41, and Russell is seventh on 37. Then come Alonso 8th, Hamilton 9th, and Tsunoda jumping into the top 10 for the first time this year on 14 points. In the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull continue to pull away at the top of the table. They're on 239 points, 52 ahead of Ferrari in second. McLaren are now a clear third, with Mercedes in fourth. Aston Martin are fifth, with Vicarb sixth on 19. Haas are 7th on 7, and Alpine are now 8th with that 1 point scored by Esteban Ocon. Williams and Sauber are yet to score. Well, guys, it's been an absolute joy to have you on the show. Thank you both very much. We're going to end this episode in the traditional way. I'm going to ask each of you for your driver of the day.
I'm going to give a completely unoriginal answer, but I feel like I'd be, well, there'd be campaigns in the street if I said anything other than Lando Norris. We've spoke so often in Formula One about him needing to take the opportunity when it arises. I think his naysayers were harsh in the past. I think the talent's always been there. And other than that elusive 2021 Sochi, he's never really had the chance. Today, he took it. He looked every bit the race winner, and he's got to be driver of the day for me.
I'm not going to give you an original answer either, TC. Just a little anecdote. I used to work for Red Bull Media House, and I remember back in 2016, just before Lando Norris did his first Macau, I got
That's
him on
Formula
the
three, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got him on the phone. I interviewed him, and he was such a sweet kid, but there was this aura around him. And for whatever reason, I felt, I don't know what it is, but I think this kid's got it. So I've kind of felt invested in seeing him go through the ranks. Been absolutely nothing to do with me, and it was just a joy to see him finally do it today, and I'm chuffed for him.
And I can't say anyone different. Lando Norris, well done from all of us on F1 Nation. You were, of course, driver of the day on the telly as well. One other person I'd like to give a shout out, though. I mentioned it earlier in the pod, but I do think Charles Leclerc has had a good weekend. Not driver of the day, but I feel this has been his best weekend so far this year, and I think there are going to be good things to come from him.
And I totally agree with your point earlier about the way he's turned it around, because the way Carlos Sainz looked so impressive, and actually Charles probably edged Carlos for pace in China as well. So the way he is, it's really difficult for a driver to pull yourselves out of a bit of a mental rut when you've been comprehensively outperformed by your teammate. Two weekends in a row he's done that now, so I completely agree with you. And when, you know, those Ferrari upgrades come, wouldn't it be fascinating to see both Lando and Charles take the fight to Max? We could be in for some juicy races towards the middle part of the season.
Bring that on.
Bring it on.
Bring that. I mean, that would be sensational, wouldn't it? Well, guys, Christian, Greg, thank you both very much for your time. It's been great to have you on the show. Before you go, Christian, what's coming up on F1 Explains this week? It's every Friday, isn't it?
New episodes every Friday, and the next Friday episode that will be released will be the show we recorded in front of an audience at this very stadium with Gunter Steiner, who, as we're all aware, can be quite entertaining. So Gunter Steiner in front of an audience, you can imagine what happens.
Lots of bleeps.
Do you know what? Spoiler alert. Not one, but we did talk about his passion for swearing in the podcast. Yeah, it was honestly, his insight was fantastic. So you'll be able to, if you weren't here in the stadium to see it in person, you'll be able to listen to it on the feed next Friday.
That's Friday. And Greg, what have you got coming up on F1.com?
Well, I would urge listeners to F1 Nation to tune into F1.com, where you can read James Hinchcliffe's analysis of the race weekend here in Miami. And you can also hear from Jolyon Palmer, former Renault racer, who will be breaking down how the weekend played out in terms of a strategic point of view. So stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned for both of those things, and also stay tuned on Wednesday, because this week's F1 Beyond the Grid is with McLaren CEO Zak Brown, who is basking in the team's first win of 2024. That'll be available on your pod feeds and the official F1 YouTube channel, as I say, from Wednesday. And we'll be back next Monday with our preview of the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, first one in Europe. That's next Monday. But for now, thank you very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.